This is the NOCM ESOL International Proficient User Level C2 listening examination. Please check that your name and other details are on your mark sheet. The invigilator will have explained how to fill in the mark sheet. Do not write on your examination paper. Put your answers on the mark sheet. The listening examination will now begin. Part 1. You will hear 10 sentences. Read the replies on your examination paper. You have 2 minutes to read the replies on your examination paper. Listen to the sentences. You will hear the sentences in full twice. Choose the best reply for the situation. You will then have 2 minutes to check your answers. 1. How long has he been here? 2. I can't find my phone anywhere. 3. Has your new neighbour moved in yet? 4. I won't be buying a new car after all. 5. Who ate all the spaghetti? 6. Should I get the red ones? 7. My teacher wants me to write another assignment. 8. I haven't been invited to Rachel's party. 9. Alfonso will definitely get into university. 10. Shall I close the window? Now listen to the sentences again. 1. How long has he been here? 2. I can't find my phone anywhere. 3. Has your new neighbour moved in yet? 4. I won't be buying a new car after all. 5. Who ate all the spaghetti? 6. Should I get the red ones? 7. My teacher wants me to write another assignment. 8. I haven't been invited to Rachel's party. 9. Alfonso will definitely get into university. 10. Shall I close the window? Now check your answers. You have 2 minutes to check your answers. Part 2. Conversations. You will hear 2 conversations. Read the questions and answers on your examination paper for both conversations. You have 2 minutes to read them. Listen to conversation one. You'll hear the conversation twice. Answer the questions. You'll then have 2 minutes to check your answers.
Good afternoon. How can I help you?
Hello. I'm thinking of buying a new vehicle, perhaps an electric or a hybrid.
I'd be happy to help. We sell electric vehicles, known as EVs, as well as traditional hybrid vehicles, which do not need charging. Could you tell me a bit about your driving habits? For instance, how far do you typically drive each week?
I commute about 40 miles a day during the week. Sometimes I take longer trips at the weekends. Altogether, I'd estimate I drive around 300 miles a week.
Given your commute, an electric vehicle could be an excellent option, especially if you have access to level 2 charging at home or work. Modern EVs, using lithium-ion batteries, typically have a range of up to 200 miles on a single charge, which would comfortably cover your daily drives.
That's good to know, but I've heard it can be difficult to find charging stations in some areas.
That's a good point. The number of charging stations is increasing, especially in cities. For longer trips, however, a hybrid car might offer more flexibility. Hybrids combine a petrol engine with an electric motor, so you could benefit from fuel efficiency and it removes the worry of finding charging points. They are also cheaper to buy than EVs.
I really want the convenience of not worrying about running out of charge. My priority is practicality and environmental impact, not price.
In that case, you may want to consider a plug-in hybrid electric vehicle, also known as PHEV. It has a larger lithium-ion battery than a traditional hybrid, giving you a range of 20 to 50 miles, and for longer journeys, the petrol engine takes over.
That sounds like the perfect option.
Now listen to the conversation again.
Good afternoon. How can I help you?
Hello. I'm thinking of buying a new vehicle, perhaps an electric or a hybrid.
I'd be happy to help. We sell electric vehicles, known as EVs, as well as traditional hybrid vehicles, which do not need charging. Could you tell me a bit about your driving habits? For instance, how far do you typically drive each week?
I commute about 40 miles a day during the week. Sometimes I take longer trips at the weekends. Altogether, I'd estimate I drive around 300 miles a week.
Given your commute, an electric vehicle could be an excellent option, especially if you have access to level 2 charging at home or work. Modern EVs, using lithium-ion batteries, typically have a range of up to 200 miles on a single charge, which would comfortably cover your daily drives.
That's good to know, but I've heard it can be difficult to find charging stations in some areas.
That's a good point. The number of charging stations is increasing, especially in cities. For longer trips, however, a hybrid car might offer more flexibility. Hybrids combine a petrol engine with an electric motor, so you could benefit from fuel efficiency and it removes the worry of finding charging points. They are also cheaper to buy than EVs.
I really want the convenience of not worrying about running out of charge. My priority is practicality and environmental impact, not price.
In that case, you may want to consider a plug-in hybrid electric vehicle, also known as PHEV. It has a larger lithium-ion battery than a traditional hybrid, giving you a range of 20 to 50 miles, and for longer journeys, the petrol engine takes over.
That sounds like the perfect option.
Now check your answers. You have 2 minutes to check your answers. Part 2. Conversations. Listen to conversation 2. You will hear the conversation twice. Answer the questions. You will then have 2 minutes to check your answers.
Good morning, Sarah. How are you feeling today?
Morning, Mr. Thompson. I'm doing all right. I'm just a bit nervous as I think my wisdom teeth are coming through.
It's understandable to feel nervous. Wisdom teeth can often cause issues if there isn't enough room for them to emerge properly. Have you been experiencing any discomfort?
Not exactly pain, but I've noticed some pressure at the back of my jaw. I've also read that maintaining good dental hygiene is crucial.
Good oral hygiene is essential. Regular brushing, flossing, and using an antiseptic mouthwash can prevent infections. However, if your wisdom teeth are only partially erupted, they can be difficult to clean properly, which can lead to decay or even gum disease.
That's a bit worrying. What are my options for dealing with them?
We could monitor them with regular checkups and x-rays. If they do become problematic, we can discuss extraction. It's often easier to remove them before they're fully developed, which can make the procedure less complicated.
What exactly does the extraction involve? I've heard different things.
It usually involves a local anaesthetic to numb the area. And if you're particularly anxious, sedation options are available. The procedure itself typically takes between 30 to 60 minutes, and recovery time can vary, but is usually just a few days.
That doesn't sound too bad. Should I change anything in my oral hygiene routine for now?
Continue with your current routine, but pay extra attention to your back teeth. We could also consider more advanced options in the future, like professional cleanings or fluoride treatments if needed.
Now listen to the conversation again.
Good morning, Sarah. How are you feeling today?
Morning, Mr. Thompson. I'm doing all right. I'm just a bit nervous as I think my wisdom teeth are coming through.
It's understandable to feel nervous. Wisdom teeth can often cause issues if there isn't enough room for them to emerge properly. Have you been experiencing any discomfort?
Not exactly pain, but I've noticed some pressure at the back of my jaw. I've also read that maintaining good dental hygiene is crucial.
Good oral hygiene is essential. Regular brushing, flossing, and using an antiseptic mouthwash can prevent infections. However, if your wisdom teeth are only partially erupted, they can be difficult to clean properly, which can lead to decay or even gum disease.
That's a bit worrying. What are my options for dealing with them?
We could monitor them with regular checkups and x-rays. If they do become problematic, we can discuss extraction. It's often easier to remove them before they're fully developed, which can make the procedure less complicated.
What exactly does the extraction involve? I've heard different things.
It usually involves a local anaesthetic to numb the area. And if you're particularly anxious, sedation options are available. The procedure itself typically takes between 30 to 60 minutes, and recovery time can vary, but is usually just a few days.
That doesn't sound too bad. Should I change anything in my oral hygiene routine for now?
Continue with your current routine, but pay extra attention to your back teeth. We could also consider more advanced options in the future, like professional cleanings or fluoride treatments if needed.
Now check your answers. You have 2 minutes to check your answers. Part 3. Debate and discussion. You will now hear a debate and a discussion. You will hear them twice. You have 2 minutes to look at the questions for both the debate and the discussion. Now listen to the debate. You will hear it twice. Answer the questions. You will then have 2 minutes to check your answers. Welcome to our podcast, The Athlete's View. Today, we're examining the lasting legacy of the Olympics on the host cities. As usual, you'll be listening to champion gymnast Emma Lee.
And, of course, former champion rower Alex Jones. Alex, let's start with your perspective. What's your view on the legacy of the Olympic Games?
Well, Emma, I genuinely believe that the Olympics bring significant long-term benefits to host cities. Take Barcelona in 1992 as a prime example. The Games transformed the city's infrastructure and boosted tourism. The investments in transport, public spaces, and sports facilities had an enduring impact, establishing Barcelona as a world-class tourist destination.
I absolutely see your point on most of that, Alex, but I think the actual legacy is often overstated. Look at Rio 2016. Yes, there was a temporary increase in tourism and there were some infrastructure improvements, but a lot of it was left unfinished. The economic burden of hosting such a grand event can be crippling, especially for developing countries.
I think you could be focusing too much on the negatives there, Emma. Consider London 2012, for example. That was a massive success. It created jobs and opportunities that still benefit Londoners today.
Of course, and the increase in swimmers in the UK since 2012 is great, but London had substantial resources to manage its legacy. It took Canada 30 years to pay off their debt following the Montreal 1976 Olympics.
As ever, Emma, it was lovely talking with you. Now listen to the debate again. Welcome to our podcast, The Athlete's View. Today, we're examining the lasting legacy of the Olympics on the host cities. As usual, you'll be listening to champion gymnast Emma Lee.
And, of course, former champion rower Alex Jones. Alex, let's start with your perspective. What's your view on the legacy of the Olympic Games?
Well, Emma, I genuinely believe that the Olympics bring significant long-term benefits to host cities. Take Barcelona in 1992 as a prime example. The Games transformed the city's infrastructure and boosted tourism. The investments in transport, public spaces, and sports facilities had an enduring impact, establishing Barcelona as a world-class tourist destination.
I absolutely see your point on most of that, Alex, but I think the actual legacy is often overstated. Look at Rio 2016. Yes, there was a temporary increase in tourism and there were some infrastructure improvements, but a lot of it was left unfinished. The economic burden of hosting such a grand event can be crippling, especially for developing countries.
I think you could be focusing too much on the negatives there, Emma. Consider London 2012, for example. That was a massive success. It created jobs and opportunities that still benefit Londoners today.
Of course, and the increase in swimmers in the UK since 2012 is great. But London had substantial resources to manage its legacy. It took Canada 30 years to pay off their debt following the Montreal 1976 Olympics.
As ever, Emma, it was lovely talking with you. Now check your answers. You have 2 minutes to check your answers. Part 3. Debate and discussion. Listen to the discussion. You will hear it twice. Answer the questions. You will then have 2 minutes to check your answers.
Thank you for meeting with me, Ms. Ford. I understand the reasoning behind a smartphone ban, but, as a parent, I rely on my daughter having her phone for safety reasons, especially since she commutes alone.
I understand, Mr. Ball. Safety is a top priority, and many parents feel the same. However, smartphones often cause distractions.
That's fair, But wouldn't a structured phone policy work instead? Establishing specific usage guidelines could allow students to learn responsible phone management.
It's a good point, but enforcing guidelines is challenging. Our teachers already have extensive responsibilities, and tracking phone use would take up time unnecessarily. A full ban helps students concentrate on their learning.
What about emergencies?
We've accounted for this. Students can store their phones in lockers and retrieve them if urgently needed. Staff are here to assist with emergency communication.
I see. But phone technology has educational benefits too.
Some apps are useful, but assuming responsible use isn't realistic. Studies link phones with reduced academic performance, and eliminating them supports the student's focus.
But isn't self-regulation a skill that students need?
Absolutely, which is why we teach digital responsibility through structured lessons rather than unrestricted phone access. This approach also reduces cyberbullying risks.
I get it. Limiting access can actually create a more focused environment and prevent bullying.
Yes, exactly, Mr. Ball. It allows us to teach and be free from constant distractions.
Thank you, Ms. Ford, for explaining the school's approach. I appreciate the thoughtfulness behind it, and I feel reassured.
Now listen to the discussion again.
Thank you for meeting with me, Ms. Ford. I understand the reasoning behind a smartphone ban, but as a parent, I rely on my daughter having her phone for safety reasons, especially since she commutes alone.
I understand, Mr. Ball. Safety is a top priority, and many parents feel the same. However, smartphones often cause distractions.
That's fair, but wouldn't a structured phone policy work instead? Establishing specific usage guidelines could allow students to learn responsible phone management.
It's a good point, but enforcing guidelines is challenging. Our teachers already have extensive responsibilities, and tracking phone use would take up time unnecessarily. A full ban helps students concentrate on their learning.
What about emergencies?
We've accounted for this. Students can store their phones in lockers and retrieve them if urgently needed. Staff are here to assist with emergency communication.
I see. But phone technology has educational benefits too.
Some apps are useful, but assuming responsible use isn't realistic. Studies link phones with reduced academic performance, and eliminating them supports the student's focus.
But isn't self-regulation a skill that students need?
Absolutely, which is why we teach digital responsibility through structured lessons rather than unrestricted phone access. This approach also reduces cyberbullying risks.
I get it. Limiting access can actually create a more focused environment and prevent bullying.
Yes, exactly, Mr. Ball. It allows us to teach and be free from constant distractions.
Thank you, Ms. Ford, for explaining the school's approach. I appreciate the thoughtfulness behind it, and I feel reassured.
Now check your answers. You have 2 minutes to check your answers. That is the end of the listening examination. Please check your mark sheet is completed correctly. Put your pens down. End of examination.